Today is April 11th, 1989. My name is Tika Ward. I'm interviewing Seeger Croom, L. Seeger Croom, Siggy. Our topic is Actors Theatre of Louisville. We are at 1301 Hepburn Avenue, Louisville, Kentucky. As we begin, Siggy, you performed in the 1972-73 season at Actors Theatre of Louisville. Tell me about it.
No. I did. I performed in several productions that year. I was hired originally for Pirates of Penzance, and then they used me quite extensively in the lunchtime theater program and the children's theater program.
I didn't know that.
It's true.
How did you get, well, we should let, you know, we should say, this was the first season at
Actors Theater.
The new Main Street location?
That's right. At the Pamela Brown Auditorium and the new location. Yeah, it was very exciting. Everything was new and being worked out and everything at the last moment.
How did you get involved in this in the first place?
Well, I had semi-theatrical background. My father was an actor and is an actor. My mother was an entertainer. She's been on TV and radio and had her own musical group, and she's so it sort of followed. Although I didn't pursue the interest in high school except just at the insistence of a few friends that I had, I just sort of got into it at the last minute. And then I turned up in college not knowing what to major in, and everybody, all my other friends were majoring in theater, so I said, okay, I'll major in theater too. So,
and where was this?
That was at Nazareth College in Nazareth, Kentucky. And then I went from theater to other things, but meanwhile, I was visiting a friend of mine in Nashville, and she was in a dinner theater production, and they talked me into auditioning, and I did, and got the job. And one thing led to another, and I just started working.
Well, how did you get the job at Actors Theater?
There was an ad in the paper for a call, and that they needed singers, and I decided, you know, give it a try.
So,
why not?
Yeah. So did it say the time it wanted you to show up and where? Or?
Yes. It was like a cattle call. You just brought your sheet music, and they didn't require that we read anything, but we did have to sing. And they were primarily, I guess, hiring singers, extra people for the company that weren't in the first hired for the main characters.
Where did you go? Where did you have to show up?
We were in the what is now the John Jory Theater was a rehearsal hall, and it was a big place. It was all open. There were no partitions or dividers or anything. It was just a big large room, and a lot of people showed up.
Did it have like come here on a Saturday from 1 to 5 or
mm-hmm.
something like that,
as I recall. It was a time of just like show up at 9 o'clock and bring your sheet music. And
what did you take?
Gosh, I think I sang something from the musical Fanny. I think I sang Fanny, the main title song.
Well, what's it like? I mean, do you hear each other sing?
Mm-hmm. It's very terrifying.
Like
very terrifying. To tell you the truth, I don't remember whether we took numbers or I don't think that's the way it was. I think what we just filled out something, turned it in, and then they called us as we came up. So it was sort of random.
Was there someone there playing the piano?
There was a pianist, and I cannot remember the person's name, but if it comes up later, I'll probably remember it. Vaughn McBride, as I remember, was conducting the audition pretty much, and there were other people there, but at that time, I, of course, wasn't familiar with anybody. I was a complete stranger to
Was anyone. Jory there?
I believe Jory was there, yes.
Did you know any of the other people who
no.
were trying out?
No, I just did this cold. It was like I had not done any professional theater in Louisville before, and I just decided to go for it.
Were you here working?
I was in between engagements, and I was just home looking for work, basically.
So this was your home base.
This was my home base, right? So I wasn't. This was like an interim period in my life, and it was just like, I read the ad and I said, you know, let's go for it.
How did you find out if you got it or not? You know, like when you left, what did they say to you all?
Okay, they didn't say too much, as usual. I was pretty typical in that way. Everybody did their little shtick and thank you very much, and we'll be in touch.
After you sang, did you leave, or did you all hang around and listen to the other people?
I hung around briefly, and then I left. I didn't stay for the whole day.
Do they usually let you know in 2 weeks? I mean, is there some kind of procedure, or?
You would, if you don't know in the following couple of days, then you pretty much don't have the part. But it's not a bad idea to pursue that. If you don't hear from them, then you can always call and find out. Most people, just when they don't hear, they don't.
So what happened in your case?
Well, they called me the next day or so and said that they wanted me to do it, and that was, and we talked briefly, money, and that was certainly not very much.
You mean on the telephone, you actually discussed
mm-hmm,
that?
Mm-hmm,
do you remember who called you?
I believe it was Vaughn McBride.
Did you happen to answer the phone?
No, I think I got a message when I got home.
So you called, you said, this is?
Yes, I said, this is Sydney, and they said, yes, and be here at such and such and such, and showed up for the rehearsal.
How did he say broach the money topic?
Well, I think it was pretty matter of fact. It was just like, we pay this and that, and we pay such and such for this.
Do you remember what it was or anything?
I received, I think it was something like $50 a week for, which was not very much, which for the pirates. And then each other thing I did, I received a certain amount per week. And it, at one point I was making $125 or so a week, which wasn't too bad for a 22-year-old upstart actor.
So how did you feel when he called you and told you?
I was, of course, I felt like I had really accomplished something, because even in 1972, and although Actors hadn't really established itself like it has now, it was still quite the respected company, and I knew with that credential that would take me a few places just in that alone.
Exactly.
And I was right, but it worked.
Okay, so you went to your first rehearsal.
Mm-hmm. And of course, I was on cloud nine. It was all, every moment was excited. I was so new to the business and everything. I suppose I was like stars in my eyes or something. Most everybody else was very ho-hum, matter of fact, let's get this over with kind of thing, the other actors. And I was just like, hanging on everything that happened, you know, and just drinking it all in and loving every minute.
So, like, you showed up, and were you all back upstairs in the Victor Jory?
I believe that's where we were. Yes, that's where we conducted most of our beginning rehearsals. That's where we did most of the blocking, and we would block it and run through, and then occasionally we'd be down on the stage to set the.
In the Pamela
Action
Brown.
Actually, in the Pamela Brown, yes.
Now, who would be there when you would be there, for instance?
Well, Frank Wicks and Vaughn McBride and there was a musical director, Alan Raphael. Yes.
Right. And then Frank Wicks was the director.
Right, he was the director. And occasionally, John Jory made an appearance, and occasionally Victor Jory made an appearance, once or twice.
That was exciting.
Yes, uh-huh. It was very exciting. I remember one of the most exciting one of the neatest moments that we had. One time we were auditioning, and the ladies were auditioning upstairs in the rehearsal hall, and the gentlemen went downstairs to rehearse on the main stage so we could rehearse our separate parts. And then we were rehearsing this one particular number that's just kind of triumphant and, you know, pomp, and we were going to get back together to do the whole number together, and we went up in the freight elevator, and sort of, I don't know what happened, but spontaneously we like broke into song, and as we were coming up in this elevator we were singing this triumphant song, and we got up there and it just, the acoustics and everything, it just reverberated, and it was just one of those little magic moments.
Now what about costumes?
Costumes. You mean?
Did they fit you, or, you know, like how does
that
work?
That came much later.
So that really does come.
So that does come much later. We spent a lot of time rehearsing and blocking and just run-throughs and that sort of thing.
This play ran from December 14th, 1972 through January 14th, 1973. When would you say you first saw that ad in the paper?
I would say late October.
And then shortly after that?
Shortly thereafter. I'm not sure I can't remember how many weeks we rehearsed, but I would say 2 to 3. It wasn't a very long, it wasn't really a long rehearsal, which was wonderful because many things I'd done before were just rehearsed and rehearsed, you know, 2 hours here and 2 hours there. We got there at 8 o'clock in the morning and rehearsed most of the day, and then when I wasn't rehearsing for Pirates, then I would be in rehearsal for Cole Porter Lunchtime Theater or the Children's Theater. So pretty much I was there 10 to 12 hours a day every day, 5 or 6 days a week.
How did it come about, the Cole Porter?
The Cole Porter came about right away. As a matter of fact, he may have told me about that at the same time of Pirates, and we got into that right on.
So you went in there auditioning for Pirates, and then maybe on the phone he said...
Yes, and we're doing Lunchtime Theater, and so we had, I think we had a cast of four in that Cole Porter.
Well, where would you rehearse for that?
Well, that would be in any corner we could. Sometimes it would be in the rehearsal hall if it was free, or we would be downstairs in the bar.
Right.
Which is where the Lunchtime Theater
was. It the Starving Artist then?
Yes.
Was that what it was called?
I don't believe they called it anything.
Okay.
I think it was just the bar at Actors Theater.
Uh-huh.
And Gloria was there from the very beginning. She was wonderful. And many of the staff of the bar.
Were the other three people with you in Cole Porter, ones who were in Pirates?
Mm-hmm. The other three that were with me were in what they called the Adventure Company, which was not the main stage company, but at that time they didn't have the John Jory Theater, but they did on Monday nights, they presented more experimental type works, and that was, they hired a cast for that, they called that the Adventure Company. That was not to be confused with the Apprentice Company. These people were paid equity scale,
Were you the Apprentice Company? Would you?
No,
that?
I was not. I was like a jobber, I guess. They jobbed me in for Pirates, and then they used me where they could because.
Would the Apprentice Company be like?
They would be like technical people mostly. Now, occasionally, they would have a walk-on in the main stage production or in the Adventure Company productions if there were. If it called for more.
Where were the Monday Night Adventure Theater?
They were on the main stage of Pamela Brown.
Now tell me about doing the Cole Porter. What was that like?
That was wonderful too. That was singing and dancing and very suave, sophisticated. Just we tried to capture the feeling of the times. We wore period. The ladies wore black gowns and we wore tuxedos, and it was about a 30-minute program, and we sang, we each had solos, and then we sang group singing, and I was really the only singer in the group. Everybody else was more an actor than a singer, and but it was very much.
How many days a week worked. Did you all do that?
We did that 5 days a week.
And then, in addition to that, you did the children's matinee. What did you do in that?
We did Pinocchio, and in addition to performing that at Actors Theater, we went on tour with it throughout the state of Kentucky.
Wow.
In the spring, after we finished the.
What was that like?
It was wonderful. For me, it was wonderful because, of course, I was still at the stage where every minute was heaven, and we traveled on a bus and, you know, in bus and truck, basically.
You'd all gather together.
Mm-hmm. But we had you know, the full range of technical assistance, so we were, even though I was not an equity performer at that time, I was regarded as or treated the same as if I were an equity.
And by that, what do you
mean? By that means you don't do anything but what you do on stage. There's no carrying props, there's no, which differs a lot from the other theater I've done where you do pretty much everything and then some. And that was sort of, I used that as, after I had worked at Actors Theater, it pretty much spoiled me for non-equity type work because there's really, they really try to humanize the profession with the union. The union really tries to make sure that everybody is treated with respect, and many of the other jobs I've had, I've been told in my face that was the same as cattle and I'd be treated that way, and actors are, you know, this and that and the other thing, and always and never really treated with that same kind of respect. But which is sad. It's really sad that people have that attitude.
When you would go on the bus, would you all go to the high school or?
Mm-hmm. The high school, or sometimes it would be the, I remember performing in the Paramount Theater in like, oh, some little Maysville, Kentucky or something, and it would be a movie theater predominantly, but they would have some sort of a stage with no wings or backstage, so you were like, you know, on your tiptoes or you'd be inside of the audience, but we performed in several big old theaters, old fabulous theaters, things that I didn't even know existed in Kentucky. You know, just big, beautiful, wonderful theaters, just like the Lowe's down here in Louisville or the Rialto. And they're all over the state, or they were at that time all over the state. I hope maybe some of them have lasted.
Was Pinocchio performed as a musical?
Mm-hmm. It was a musical. It was lots of singing, lots of action. It was a very up production. It was the man who played the Major General in Penzance directed, and it was really a fun show.
Would he go with you when you all went on the road?
No. He was there for all the rehearsals and got us gelled, and then from then on it was.
So nobody would go with you all except you all.
Vaughn McBride, I believe, and there's someone else too that I just cannot recall his name. He did a lot of piano accompaniment and that sort of thing.
When you all did, okay, so you had to have costumes for that. Mm-hmm. You had to have the costumes for pirates. Mm-hmm. What was that like, having your all, what do you do?
Well, you have costume call, and it's like almost like an appointment, sort of, and it's like, okay, you're in costume at 3 o'clock, you know, this afternoon, so that's what you do. You go, you're in costume, and you just stand there, and everybody puts clothes on you and says, okay, that's it.
What time did you all do that in?
There was a costume room at that time, and we just reported there, and that was pretty much where that happened, and some of it happened in the dressing rooms, fitting, and if any problems occurred.
Do you remember Paul Owen?
Yes, I do. He was a real sweetheart and very talented, but he was very professional and very business. And it was like, as long as we were at work and rehearsal or whatever, it was pretty much all business, no funny stuff. So I didn't get to really know him personally.
And do you remember whether this was his first time there?
No, I don't. I don't think so. It may have been his first season at Actors since it was a new facility and everything, but he was quite accomplished already.
Do you remember any of the other cast? They had a resident cast.
Right.
Do you remember any of that resident cast?
Yes. Actually, for Pirates itself, many of the main characters were jobbed in for that particular performance. Now, Patrick Tovat was a resident, I believe, and there were a handful of others, Leanne Fahey, but many of the people, and all of the people in the Adventure Company, and of course, were, but many of the, I think many of the resident cast didn't arrive, or did not do that production. That year, there was a lot of extra casting done, because I believe after they did this, they did Kentucky this year too, and that was not a usual thing to it. Called for a lot of extra.
Do you remember anything about, were John and Leanne married yet?
No, they weren't. John too was all business, and you didn't really chum around at all with him. Leanne is just as she appears to be. She's bubbly and real sweet, and I wondered if that was really her at the time. And she could come off kind of saccharine, but when you got to know her, it wasn't saccharine. It was just really sweet.
I want to ask you also, what was opening night? Or now, did you all have a preview, and
yes,
then you had opening?
Yes, Wednesday night preview.
It was a Wednesday night.
Yes, I remember it was a Wednesday night.
Or is it always on a Wednesday night?
Well, it probably is. It probably is.
Yeah,
but
okay.
The preview was exciting. It went very well. Anything you would imagine that it would be. It was just all of your expectations and everything, and finally, there you were. I mean, we'd had a dress rehearsal and all that still even before that, but this was the night, you know, and it was like now or never sort of thing, and it gelled and it worked, and the audience was wonderful. And then opening night was the same way. It was just a beautiful show. It's hard for me to, it's hard for anyone to describe Gilbert and Sullivan. It's one of those things that it doesn't usually play well taken out of context. A lot of us have heard music that Gilbert and Sullivan wrote, and we've heard of the plays, but there's something really, really charming and wonderful about the whole intact. And that was another thing, was that we were very faithful to the original doily cart production. It was done very, very straight Gilbert and Sullivan vintage. I mean, it could have been taken from, you know, the times, and that was pretty neat.
When you all had your dress rehearsal, did anyone come and watch?
Yeah, a handful of family, of staff, and that sort of thing. But it wasn't an audience, per se. So you didn't get the feedback.
After you had the preview, did you make any changes before the opening night performance?
No. Mm-mm. Pretty much the show stayed the same.
And then at this time, let's say that you had the preview and you were having your dress rehearsal, were you really doing the Cole Porter and the, that was all going on simultaneously?
All going on. Everything but the children's theater thing. But I did start the children's theater thing while I was still doing Lunchtime Theater and the Pirates as well. So for a while there, I was doing three shows all at once. Rehearsing for one and performing on two. It's never been a trick for me. It's just something that I can do. It just, I have a real, almost photographic memory, and that sort of thing, learning music or learning lines, is, I just, you know, practice and it comes.
Do you practice at home alone?
Mm-hmm. Yes, you read, you practice alone. You, if you have dialogue, which in Pirates I didn't have any dialogue, it was strictly singing, then you usually recruit a friend or someone or a fellow actor to run lines with you. And much of the time when I wasn't rehearsing, I was running lines with the other guys, you know, the adventure company, where, because they had tremendous amounts of dialogue to learn.
Because, so you would be there.
So I would be there. I would be, you know, I wanted to be there as much as I could be. As a matter of fact, I don't believe I had a car in those days, and I lived out in way out US 42, and
where?
In Hills and Dales subdivision.
Is that beyond?
Beyond Limekiln Lane. It's the next.
But that's not way out.
Well, it was 1970.
I lived on Rose Island Road.
Oh, that's way out. This wasn't that way out, but there were no buses, and cab fare was like a quarter of my week's salary. So
you had to take a cab.
So a couple of times I took a cab, but most of the time I was able to, you know, hitch a ride with somebody, or one way or the other, get home. But that part wasn't important. I didn't want to go home.
Were you among the youngest?
Mm-hmm. Yes, I was. I was 22. And most everybody else was 24 and 26 and up. Even in the adventure company, I was the youngest.
What had been your background in theater prior to that?
Just some high school and college. I did Henry VIII and Royal Gambit in college, which was quite an undertaking in an all-girls school. But, and I'd been in, I had been in Barefoot in the Park, and I had been in Blithe Spirit, Noel Coward's Blithe Spirit, which is quite a sophisticated play to be presented by juniors in high school. But I think we did it. But I played Charles Condamine, the lead character, and talk about memorizing dialogue. I mean, he's on stage for the entire show. And then, because everybody knew about my memory pretty much, I was home for the week. I wasn't even living in Bardstown anymore. I had already left and gone and transferred to another high school, and I was home for the weekend in Bardstown, and they were doing Arsenic and Old Lace, and one of the people broke their arm right before the show, and they called me up and said, would you come and stand in for this guy? And it took a little twisting in my arm, but I said, okay, sure, and I did it, and I went, and as they were putting clothes on me, I was learning, like, I only had a few lines, but it was a couple of pages, and I was learning my dialogue as they were dressing me and going, we were going on stage, and so anyway, that was that. But I had done a couple of also professional, little professional things. I'd been in the opera Carmen in University of Miami with Regina Crespin, and we had done another big thing, Elijah, with Miami Beach Symphony.
And how'd you end up down there?
I was in school down there. In between all this other stuff, I went to about five different colleges in and among my working and everything.
You learned a lot that way, didn't you?
Yes, I learned. I wouldn't trade it for a degree right now at all. I mean, it was wonderful. I pursued what I wanted to pursue when I wanted to pursue it, and maybe that wasn't the most career-minded thing in the world to do, but I was really just interested in learning and broadening myself. I figured the career would come later.
After you, did you all read the review? You know, is that a big
deal?
Yes,
it's a big deal, and it was not a good review. It was, unfortunately, as in many cases, it was a very unfair review. Ed Dixon, who had one of the most beautiful tenor voices, did not have a good night, opening night. We are all human beings, and he may have wavered on a note or two throughout the whole production. And that was what they did the article about. It was like just almost an assassination of Ed Dixon, the whole article. And the rest, they couldn't say very much about the rest of the show. You know, it was, it wasn't.
This is side two of tape one. All right, so you all discussed the review?
Yes, we discussed the review. We talked about murder. I do believe Ed called up. I do believe it was William Moots. And said some things that he wanted to get off his chest. And I'm not quite sure if I remember what they were, but it wasn't pleasant.
Yeah, what do you think about the impact of reviews? You must have an opinion.
Well, it's really, really rather horrible. I don't know what I don't, for one thing, you know, not to even talk about Actors Theater or being in theater, I find critics very, I don't know. I don't really know if I know what their purpose is. I find that when I read a review of something, it colors my judgment so much that most of the time I don't even want to see it or, you know, anything. And I think that's really detrimental. I don't think that's positive. And I'm just not quite sure I know what is positive about it. But as far as critics and theater go, I think that it's so hard to put everything you've got into something for weeks at a time and develop something from nothing and create it and put it out, and then have somebody say, discount the whole thing because someone had toilet paper on his shoe, or, you know, it's just, you know, there's more to it than that. And I think that even a production that's less than perfect, I think it can better everybody that sees it, and I don't see why critics are necessary.
They wield a lot of power.
Yes, they do. They do. A lot of economic power as well as other types. And it's really sad. I think, you know, I may be off base, but I think they're possibly one of the big problems with the American theater. And I think that critics are regarded differently in Europe and especially in London, where the West End theater, that is where all the theater is coming from now. And I think that's partially why, because there's not that economic frightening thing where if one critic says this is bad that you close the next night. That doesn't happen in Europe. You may get five good reviews and five bad reviews and the play can run for years, whereas here you can get one bad review and close the next night on Broadway. So it's kind of sad.
When you were there, did you ever see Sandy Spear?
Yes, just doing his bit.
What was he doing in those days?
He was in the business office. So occasionally he would be at the functions and everything, and occasionally he would speak to the audience or something like that. Mm-hmm. About subscriptions or something, but he played a fairly passive role at that time.
What about Trish Pugh? Did you ever see her?
Mm-hmm. She was tremendously energetic and vivacious, and spent a lot of time with Trish. She cared a lot about people. She cared a lot about all of the people that worked with Actors Theatre. And she was just there, and she was always up, and she was a wonderful person.
What about David Talbot? Did he come? Was he the official photographer in those
mm-hmm.
days?
He sure was, and we took quite an extensive amount of pictures of pirates. We had a photographic session, at least one or two. Yeah, and I wish I still had the slides.
Because you had some.
Because I had some. I had about a dozen slides, and they were wonderful.
Now, what about Kurt Wilhelm? Was he around?
Mm-hmm. He was set design or... Yes, he was around, and I knew him. I believe he was married at the time.
What about, now, was Actors Associates, do you remember them?
Mm-hmm. They fed us. They were wonderful. On Saturday, of course, we did two performances almost back-to-back. I think there was an hour or half an hour between the performances, and they, the equity ruling is that in cases like that, the theater must provide dinner. And so the Actors Associates, that was their, one of their primary functions, and they always provided something wonderful. It was always something really wonderful and high quality cuisine.
So this would be on a Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
Was it only women who were in Actors Associates in those days?
Mm, I believe. I didn't notice any men at that time.
Do you remember any of the people in particular?
I don't remember anybody by name.
And then, did you all get paid on a certain day? You knew?
Mm-hmm.
You said that after you were at Actors Theater, you knew it would make a difference in your life. Well, how did it make a difference in your life?
Well, I went on from Actors Theater to, at that point I was pretty much going to pursue the theatrical route, and I had been given enough positive reinforcement, which is, I felt tremendously lucky to have gotten so much positive reinforcement instead of a lot of rejection. Most people start out with a lot of rejection and then they persevere and then it gets better. Me, I started out with no rejection, and when the rejection started coming, I didn't deal with it well at all. As a matter of fact, that's probably what turned me away from the profession in the long run. It's just a psychological thing. It's just very hard to deal with, even when you know the reasons. You know, it's. I worked a whole season with the Nashville Children's Theater, which was another very highly regarded. It was probably the number one children's theater in the United States when I was there, and I was carried an entire season, and then we toured for a summer with all over the state of Tennessee and in Washington, D.C. And then we came back, and I was hired to do promotion for the fall. And then I wasn't picked up because I was too much of an individual. They said that I was too much of a type that to be in the company, because I couldn't. I was recognizable as myself, and I couldn't be too a broad range of characters. And I can understand that, but it wasn't still easy to deal with because I was becoming very secure. That was another thing. Most jobs you get in theater are, you know, from 6 weeks to, at the very longest, 6 months, and maybe sometimes a year if you get a Broadway tour. And I needed more security in my life. I have to know where my base is and where I'm going to be going. And just.
Have you gone to Actors Theater on and off
mm-hmm.
over the years?
Many of my friends that were formerly in theater, I think Janann Dorman, who was with public relations for years, we were at Nashville Children's Theater together she was an actress then, and then she switched over to administrative, and we both, we talk and we both wonder about how, you know, it would have been if we'd stayed in the theater and everything, but
when you think about theater and you think about Actors Theater, what's the first thing you think of? What about Actors Theater makes it stand out or have its own identity among other theaters?
I think quality is one of the things that comes first to my mind. Quality of production and quality of content and professionalism. It's just impeccable as far as I'm concerned, and I don't think any actor in the United States would not be extremely proud and fortunate to have Actors Theater on their resume.
Have you been to any of the Humana Festival of New American
mm-hmm.
plays?
Yes, I have. Not this year, I haven't been, but in past years I attend one or two. I'm not, that was going to say about Janann. We, neither one of us, are theater goers anymore. I mean, many people that I know that have been in theater are not particularly theater goers anymore. There's something about when you lose the magic it's not as much fun to see it as it was when you didn't know every last thing. It's very hard not to be aware of the little glitches and the lighting glitches and what, you know, this should have been bluer or that should have been brighter or there should have been a spotlight on this person or this person's lines, you know, were delivered in the wrong, you know, blocking. Or it's just very hard to get over that. And occasionally, in certain productions, I don't see any of that stuff, and I'm just able to become part of the audience, but most of the time it's not that way.
When you look back at 1972, is there anything you'd like to add? You know, memories?
Well, it was one of the most wonderful times of my life. I will always remember it. When it came to an end for me, and the Pinocchio was the last thing I did, and when the tour ended, and there were no more, gee, we've got this show, and are you interested? It was tremendously a big letdown, because, and that's ultimately, I'm sure, why I didn't continue in the theater, because once you have done it the right way, all the way down the line, it's very hard to go back. And I did. I did other things after that, in dinner theater, and I was always comparing it to Actors Theater, and you know, in my mind, if not verbally, and nothing ever measured up. And so it's just, but it's wonderful. I use my experiences from that part of my life every day, and I think about them every day. I may not think, oh, Actors Theater or something, but something about it. I felt like I was part of really something, you know, wonderful. I could have been in a hit movie and it wouldn't have been any more wonderful to me, you know. So it was a wonderful experience.
Siggy, thank you.
You're welcome.
Siggy and I were just looking over the Actors Theatre of Louisville production history. And we're looking at the 72-73 season, and we're looking at the list of children's theater, with Pinocchio being the first one they performed.
Yes.
And then the lunchtime theater. There's Cole Porter, and then
State Shore Canteen, and then A Mummer's Christmas, which was the premiere of that production, written by Tom Jones and Harvey Schmidt of the Fantastics fame. And it was a wonderful, it was a short, you know, of course, adapted for lunchtime theater, but it was a wonderful, warm little Christmas play, and it was very well received. But that's just an example of some of the really firsts, you know, that Actors Theater dealt with. They don't just, you know, rehash old plays like many.
Now, what about Tricks? Did you talk about Tricks?
Yes, Tricks was going on this whole time too. In New York, and as a matter of fact, many of us flew up there for the opening night. Yes, and I was there.
Did they pay for you all to play?
No, we scraped together our hard-earned. I think I stayed at the Waldorf Astoria, but no, we all went up there. I believe just for one night, if I'm not wrong, because of course none of us were rich, but many of us just flew up there for opening night and. It was just quite exciting. Of course, that was all part of the whole thing. It was almost like here you were part of this big magic machine, and you know, we're on Broadway and we're in Louisville and the lunchtime, and you know, it's just like this thing is going to be, you know, world famous, which it is. But
now Jean Innes, there's a picture of Victor Jory and Jean Innes there at opening night. Do you remember her too, as well as Victor Jory?
Yes, René Auberginois, who starred in Tricks on Broadway.
But what happened with it?
With Tricks?
Yeah.
Okay, this is what happened. It was, of course, a tremendous success here, and it was a tremendous success in D.C. the following season. Then what happened was what happens, I'm sure, many times. They took something that was wonderful and tried to make it a Broadway success. And they, by the time they got finished with it, was hardly recognizable as the original thing. Because, you know, we had to glitz this up for Broadway, and we had to add this for Broadway, and this, you know, and actually, I'm sure John Jory was just a madman over the whole thing, because he wanted this so bad, you know, this success, that I think they just tried too hard and did too much. And it ended up, it was still a wonderful little show. I just, it just went, it didn't have that dear, wonderful, you know, deep quality that it had before. It was just frothy and funny and commercial.
Did you all sense it that night?
I think so, to a great extent. I think pretty much we sensed it. There was, I think everybody enjoyed the show, but everybody was looking at it for the differences in it.
And you could see?
Yes, oh yes.
Different even from Washington?
Oh yes.
Was Washington different from Louisville's?
Yes, and they changed it many times in, you know, they did it in Detroit before they opened. That was their first thing before they opened on Broadway, and it was even different there. And they kept changing it and changing it and changing it again and changing it again. And let's make it better, let's make it better. And I think they just changed it to the point where they didn't know what they had started with or something. Mm-hmm. But that happens with a lot of things.
So you were saying that John Jory was talking about theater.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you would sometimes hear him talking, or he would come through and talk to you all, or?
Well, I took a class at a graduate course at U of L called Theater Institute, and it was taught by John Jory and Ken Jenkins. And they lectured, you know, and we did theater games, and that was a tremendous experience too. I hate to say it after all these years, but I actually think I worshiped John Jory in the beginning. I mean, he just was tremendous. He was just like ideas were like penned up, and they were like trying to burst out of different parts of his body. I mean, he was just tremendously exciting and electric. And when he was involved with the Theater Institute class at the U of L, this wasn't a little throwaway thing that he was doing. He was there 100%. It was just as if he were producing one of his plays at Actors Theater. He was that involved. He just is tremendously involved with anything he does, or at least that's the way it was.
Did you take this class when you were in the Pirates of Penzance?
No, this was before.
Mm-mm.
This is a before. This was my first my first encounter, I guess, with John Jory as far as Actors Theater.
So
that was previous couple of years, maybe 2 years prior, 2 or 3.
Did you ever go to the theater at the railroad station?
Oh, yes. I didn't go to the one on 4th Street, but I knew it was there. And it was kind of bizarre because it was this little walk-up place with a banner outside, and I always wanted to go in, but never did. I was really young, 15 or 16 or something. But I did attend plays at the railroad station.
What do you remember about that?
I remember it was just wonderful. It was, I was very into avant-garde, you know, anything at that point in my life, you know, and you saw very little of that on television or in the movies or in any way that we had access to here in Louisville. And, you know, every play they did wasn't bizarre and avant-garde, but they did take a lot of chances and do a lot of really, I guess what they would be considered experimental type theater, which was wonderful. And it was always wonderful. And when I went, every time I went, it was like an experience, and it wasn't just going to a play, you know. It was, you know, it built on something else. That was wonderful.
So you read, how'd you find out about this class? Was this a time in your life when you were going
to school? I was in school at Eastern University, as a matter of fact, at the time, and read about the class, I suppose, and that was it. I had to be in that class, so I commuted from Richmond, Kentucky, And I wasn't even a graduate student.
Oh, they said, how'd you get in the graduate class?
They just accepted. You know, I just told them I wanted to take it for not for credit, just, you know.
Was it like a seminar?
Mm-hmm.
One day a week?
Twice? Twice a week, I believe.
And you'd
drive. It was a night class. It was an evening class from 7 to 10 or something like 7 to 9:30 or something like that. And I had a pathetic old Falcon and didn't have any ball joints or anything in it. And I risked the trip with, and my friend Wanda took the class with me. And she was going to school at UK, so we commuted from Lexington and Richmond to Louisville twice a week just to go to that class.
So you knew who John Jory was?
Mm-hmm.
And you knew who Ken Jenkins was?
I didn't know who he was. But then I did after that.
Where was the class held at UK?
It was held in the building where the cafeteria is. I don't know,
The student center.
Student center, yeah. It was held upstairs in the student center in a very large kind of auditorium-ish type thing.
How many kids were in the
There
class?
Were quite a few. I would say 30.
What do you remember about it?
I remember John Jory just lectured quite a bit. He talked about his feelings about the theater, and then we did some theatrical games, sort of psychological repart. Well, you know, there were like exercises, and he would set up the exercise, and you would have a partner, and you would be involved in whatever it was. I mean, some of the things was like mirror imaging, and you would stare into your partner's eyes, and then you would start movements, and a lot of them were very involved things that I can't exactly remember, but it was play acting, but it was done in a very structured manner. I'm sure that they weren't his inventions, but...
Would Ken be in the room at the same time? Would they alternate? One would be there, one...
We would all just... both... That's a good question. I don't really remember. I think they alternated, or they were occasionally there at the same time. I don't believe they were both there all at the same time.
And were most of the people in the class would-be actors, or a just lot, people interested in the theater?
There were many people. I remember one in particular, woman almost ended up marrying my father. She was a Greek actress, and her name was Rula. Not Rula Lenska, but her name was Rula. And she was a Greek actress, and she had married some American boy, and she was living over here in Jeffersonville. And this was her, you know, link to the real world or whatever. And she has gone back to Greece since and become quite a successful TV and motion picture actress.
Would Ken be the one who might lead the theatrical exercises, or would Jory do that just as much?
Just as much. I had just utmost respect for both of them. It was just a tremendously exciting, you know, thing, all of it. I just remembered when I knew the class was going to be held, there wasn't anything that was going to keep me from being in it.
Did he talk about playwriting at all in those days?
No, not really. It was mostly the big picture. You know, it was the overall thing. It was theater in relation to the world, and then in particular, the different mechanics of being an actor, and, you know, that sort of thing. It wasn't done so much as a theatrical appreciation class. It was more of a workshop for actors in sort of a beginning sense, but still it was, you know, very much one-on-one with somebody that you really admired.
Siggy, tell me the importance to you in your life of performing at Actors Theatre.
Well, it's part of me. I feel that being involved with something, in this case Actors Theatre, that was so great and so well done, it adds to my everyday life in my attitude and my self-confidence and the way I portray myself in my own little world. And that's what I mean when I say that it's part of me every day. It's not that I think of Actors Theater every day, but it is part of me, of who I am now. I didn't just graduate from high school and go to beauty school, you know. And it's part of my character, and it's having been a part of something that I felt had no, you know, it was just downright wonderful and great.
This is the end of side 2, tape 1, my interview with L. Seeger Crew.